Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists zooming in from the Philadelphia metropolitan area. We welcome you to this and the other two public meetings that we're sustaining through voluntary efforts during this pandemic. Before we make the announcements, we would like to read the United Lodge of Theosophists Declaration. The spine, the backbone of all efforts from Philadelphia and the other 23 ULT lodges around the world. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on end and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and to all. As was said just a few minutes ago, there are 24 ULTs around the world. There certainly are far more independent, open-minded seekers and students scattered around their little study groups here and there, and there's certainly lots of internet connections like we're making this morning. All of them reflect this very brief but very sacred declaration of shared purposes. In Philadelphia, we've had, of course, to disband public meetings and the book table and the reference library, but the work still goes on. On Wednesday evenings, promptly at 7:30, there's always a Zoom session. And during the month of June, we are studying the supplementary general. That is a portion of the Answers to Questions by Robert Crosby. It's the back portion of the book. This coming Wednesday is June 17th, and at 7:30, we will have a volunteer lead the class on pages 243 to 249 of Answers to Questions. So that class will last about an hour and will be semi-formal, sort of. On Friday at 5:15, there is another Zoom session. This one is highly informal, more a round table, but still a group study, a group meditation. So 5:15 on Friday night, the Zoom session will be studying together in a little book by B.P. Wadia entitled Living the Life. And we are in chapter 2 for this coming week. So again, that's Friday. The class starts at 5:15 promptly, and it lasts until, frankly, the energy level is dissipated, sometimes an hour, sometimes more, but everybody's welcome. Sunday mornings during the month of June, it is the custom in Philadelphia to consider practical theosophy, and that's what we're doing this month of June. Every Sunday morning, promptly at 11, there is a Zoom session as there is today, probably the most formal of all, sometimes a forum, sometimes a short talk, sometimes a panel, but always ample time for questions and answers, discussion in general. Keeping in line with the umbrella theme of practical theosophy, this morning we're considering the title Unity, Study, and Work. All of these efforts, everybody you see on screen or hear on screen, all of the work done behind the scenes on the building, everything is sustained by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money, and for no other reason other than to protect the theosophical movement as it ripples around the world. So without further delay, we'll have a presentation of a short talk entitled Unity, Study, and Work. Please mute if you're not speaking.
In the book, The Friendly Philosopher by Robert Crosby, and specifically in letter 7, there is this sentence that was obviously put there to begin the start of this talk. Here are his words. We have but to keep in mind and heart the original lines laid down by each Blavatsky and William Hugh Judd, namely, unity first, as a focus for spiritual growth and mutual strength. Study, that a knowledge of the movement, its purpose, its teachers, and its message may be had. Work upon ourselves in the light of study, and for others first, last, and all the time. Unity, study, and work may be said to be the three sides of an equilateral triangle and stand together or fall apart. Unity, study, and work have to be understood and implemented in their wider aspects to make them really effective. Unity among companions and co-students is not only desirable, but is the first and most important of the three objects of theosophy. And I'm sure you remember that it is a statement of universal brotherhood. The first and main object of the theosophical movement and is the formation of a nucleus for the practical implementation for the idea of universal brotherhood, irrespective of any dogma, creed, religious belief, or opinions whatsoever. But with that as a nucleus, the circle has to be expanded to embrace the whole of mankind. A love of collective humanity is our increasing aspiration, said a master. It should be ours as well. Spiritual growth is impossible without unity as a basis. Study, if understood in its wider aspect, constitutes not mere book study, but also self-study. Learning through experience and learning from others. The purpose of life is to learn, and life is all made up of learning. Studying intelligently leaves the hearts of men and our own hearts, requires many lifetimes of dedicated work. Work not only in the without, as important as that is, but in and on ourselves, each one. That has for its object the enlightenment of oneself for the good of others, says Mr. Judge. Even the work of self-improvement requires an altruistic motive, and that motive must be to benefit mankind. Study, application, promulgation, like unity study and work, are aids to the development of the whole man. To benefit mankind, knowledge is the first requisite. Without knowledge, there can be no practice. Without service, no knowledge. Theosophy shows the way of lasting cure for the lopsidedness that is almost universal in our age. Man's constitution must be correctly understood if this defect is to be overcome. And furthermore, man's identity with the macrocosm. Therefore, study of the human constitution, study of correspondences, of the relation between man and God, man and nature, etc., is a must. H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge took pains to record as much as we are at our level, are ready to receive on these and other matters, with as a specific objective, not to just satisfy our intellectual curiosity, but to enable us to find out for ourselves the applications of this knowledge to live the life necessary and at the same time to benefit mankind. Man cannot be truly moral without real knowledge, nor can the development of love and compassion take place. The vital connection between unity, study, and work needs to be understood. Mr. Judge says that through brotherhood, we receive the knowledge of others. Through application, we learn. Metaphysics and ethics are the two wings which we use to soar upwards. And the connecting link between the two is unity. We cannot soar or even rise above the mundane level without unity. HPB went to the extent of saying that outside of metaphysics, no occult philosophy or esotericism is possible. Study of theosophy, regularly pursued, trains the mind to free itself from the net of petty, personal, and mundane thoughts, and to dwell more on lofty, universal, and impersonal ideas, thus making the mind more porous to higher influences. Study gives the mind breadth of vision and liberality of view, and makes it tolerant and appreciative of the viewpoint of others, and at the same time infuses it with the faculty of discrimination. Unity follows from such study as a focus for spiritual growth and strength, and the basis of successful work is unity. The Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists provides a real basis for unity, study, and work. Any considerable number, said Mr. Crosby, living, thinking, acting upon this basis must form a spiritual focus from which all things are possible. Those who have a proper bent of mind and a purposeful desire to achieve instinctively seek the company of those similarly imbued. The unity of thought, will, and feeling that pervades a caucus of students reacts for their mutual good, helping them on to see the unity of all things. Study is the effort to tune oneself to be in harmony with life. And if the unity that is felt is to be realized, then the potency of selfless work in the hard school of the selfish world must make itself felt. The result of study, when diverted to selfish ends, leads to an isolation which is the opposite pole to unity realized through selflessness. Mr. Crosby explains that study enables us to gain true knowledge. Good motive without knowledge makes scary work sometimes. There may be good motive, but power and zeal might be misused for want of knowledge. From our theosophical studies, we know about reincarnation. We know about karma. We know about life after death. We know about the law of brotherhood. We know about the existence of the path. And we know about the Mahatmas and much more. But the practical effort to tread that path in terms of the heart doctrine is much more important. To spread broadcast these teachings by word of mouth and by the application of them in living your life are also exceedingly more important. We have to keep up the spirit of devotion, of solidarity, of intelligent perception of the great truths, not only in theosophical work, but all the time in all our work. Theosophical teachings seek to change the inner nature of man and have the power to transform animal man to human man, and finally to divine man. And lastly, study does something else. It kills in us all pride, all egotism, even that egotism which is mock modesty and which says, I am nobody. We are somebody. Each one of us is part of the great breath. As a matter of fact, we are it. Study brings us this vision of the deeper self, which is divine, and that begets true humility. So once again, the topic for discussion is unity, study, work.
Thank you. So you've heard the voluntary efforts of an individual looking at aspects of philosophy and presenting. I'm sure that you showed up zooming in this morning with your own observations and considerations on this topic. Anyone? Yes? MW?
Well, it was interesting because when the speaker mentioned part of his talk, he said, and what unifies all three of them together? For whatever reason, the first thing that popped into my mind was motive. And then at one point it said that it not motive with good motive without knowledge can be detrimental to oneself and to others. So where does motive fit in then?
Where does motive fit in? Well, can we propose that we truly, as soul, live in the mind and use all the lower aspects of mundane life to express what we live in the mind? So how we color the day, how we color the action, the roots of the thinking, the causation factor of motive, can change an outward action completely. We're reminded of a very old recording that's offered to students of archaeology and anthropology about the role that certain missionaries played in the South Pacific in their great exuberance and great kindness. Their motive was to promote new technology, perfect knives for every member of a particular indigenous nation. The actual outcome of that intended kindness and great gift was to totally demolish the culture and the society, because in the indigenous world, you had a knife in your adult life because you had fashioned it and created it and earned the right to have it. It became a tool that represented an entire life's meditation. Missionaries did not understand that. So motive becomes so important and colors every aspect of action, thought, word, and deed.
CBW?
CBW.
Well, I know for certain that we felt like a kindergartner the first time we heard about these teachings. We heard, but it went right over our head. So the advice seems to be these three words: contemplation, concentration, and then meditation. But it has to be repeated quite frequently. Meanwhile, the library, reading the books, the fundamental ideas, the declaration, we hear these words over and over again, and eventually maybe 3 words out of 10 will make their impression. So it seems to me that we have to follow that process of contemplation, concentration, and then meditation. 3 words that we may not have the right meaning for those words. Contemplation, concentration, then meditation. What are they?
Well, you know, the philosophy invites great depth of thinking from not only the head level, not intellectually, but from the heart level. It's not enough to be able to word call. We have to be able to read critically, to draw inferences, to see the meaning and symbols and correspondences, to read between the lines, to understand the spirit of the law rather than just the cold words of the law. So as seekers come to the philosophy of theosophy, they're often already in contemplation, aren't they? They're like Arjuna in the Gita in a certain way, where they've been considering the great questions of life. They've been seeking answers for those great questions of life. And they're open to considering, to concentrating on new terms, new ideas, exchanges with others, so that there can be a shared meditation, a shared focus, a shared effort of understanding. And once there's a base, a glimmer of new knowledge, a new open-mindedness, a new open-heartedness, don't we begin to pick up tools that we can apply in everyday life to ameliorate the conditions of our lives and the lives of others? To explore, to see if these principles and propositions and corollaries, if indeed they are reflection of universal truth. And it's by the ongoing effort. The speaker this morning talked about an effort based on the unity of the understanding of true nature self in each one, a unity of effort in work and service that is not only based on introspective contemplation, but is also based on the metacognitive applied knowledge and the analysis of the outcome. Why? To be the better able to help and teach others, to serve others, to find the solutions for the great woes around the globe at the present time. Were there other thoughts on that process? SL?
Well, the speaker talked about the idea that when one pursues collectively or individually these three, unity, study, and work, either the individual or the group becomes a spiritual focus. What does that mean, to become a spiritual focus?
To become a spiritual focus. You know, one of the original objects that Blavatsky and Judge promoted throughout the world, but especially here in the West, the first object was a reminder of where the theosophical movement came from. Where did it actually start? And that object, that goal, was to form the nucleus of universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, color, or creed. Certainly that's been the focus as well. So as we strive, both in fixed periods of meditation, when we're sitting for periods of study, contemplation, consideration, when we are working through the course of a 24-hour day, attempting to maintain a mindful overview of our reactions, our motives, our challenges, as we move through that process, what is actually being created is that the self-conscious entity, the soul that stands behind each human form, is creating a spiritual focus, a one-pointedness, a basis of a nucleus of the true universal notion of the brotherhood of humanity, and thinking, willing, speaking, acting from that basis, that spiritual basis, mindfulness, rather than getting lost in the great pinball machine, if you will, of the external world. Was there follow-up? Did you have additional thoughts on that, SL?
Well, from what was said then, the two effects of the spiritual focus are one, that that nucleus becomes a source itself for spiritual influence in the community of like-minded individuals, regardless of time or space. But also that that nucleus or that individual being a spiritual focus now can attract and become open to the influence of wiser beings, great souls, those individuals who are looking for companions and opportunities to help humanity. So they attract that help as well as becoming a focus to give it to others.
Attracting the help of the elder brothers, and we certainly can find historical as well as mythological or legendary references across time, all periods of time and all peoples and all places, of elder brothers kind of working in the wings. In the Eastern world, there's a notion of the guru parampara chain, that each degree of intelligence, from the most finite and limited we can imagine, from that most constricting condition, all the way up and through all of the points of consciousness, through what we can begin to envision as a perfected or a deific man, an enlightened soul, a Mahatma. All are in a chain of potential helpers. And if we consider the correspondences, we know there's a lot of medical research we could look into. On this physical plane, there's tremendous evidence that the physical brain is a generator, that there's a chemical electromagnetic dynamo resident in the physical and the invisible aspects of the physical. Well, we can take that as a reflection, a lower reflection of what is on highly spiritual planes. So as we fine-tune motive and thought, as we make a sincere attempt to work in unison and harmony with great nature, as spiritual dynamos, just like on the physical plane, we generate electromagnetic, chemically based currents of energy, of attraction and repulsion. So too, as soulful thinkers, we generate that same sort of process, but on a metaphysical plane, on a higher plane. And it is said, if indeed the proposition is that all entity, all soul proceeds from the one source, that source, that true spiritual nucleus is one and forever, without beginning, without end. It is merely that as conditioned entities, soul working through matter, we need to dial in back to that nucleus. And we can, as soul working through the human state, do the unique function of transmuting the lower conditions toward that higher nucleus and translating the reality of that nucleus down through the lower conditions of the guru parampara chain.
CBW.
Wait a minute, CBW. MW. MDW is first.
Yes, thank you. Aren't we all engaged in this grand experiment right now that we have come together out of a curiosity to know the truth? And through that curiosity, we are found like-minded people who share in this curiosity and this wanting to know the truth. So this is a grand experiment that we're working on, is forming that nucleus of universal brotherhood. You know, we come together and of like minds, but we are shown a path of study, and that we all study it together. And like this morning, these are all ideas that we have studied together, and we have some kind of feeling about it. You know, how do we put this theosophy into practice? You know, and this topic this morning is how we do that. You know, well, we have formed a sangha, a family, or a group of like-minded individuals, and we're trying to study together, and through that study we are putting it into action by, you know, as best we can and however we can. But, you know, it's not for someone else to look at us and say, well, is he doing the best that he can? It's for us to look at ourselves and see if we're doing the best that we can. So this idea of unity and study and work is really at the core of what we're doing. And it's quite appropriate that in this next week, it sort of is the general idea of what we are all about. And Mr. Crosby, pointed that out for us through the works of HPB and Mr. Judge. So I guess it's all with gratitude that all of us take up the subject this morning, because how do we do it? How do we become better theosophists? Well, you know,
excellent points.
By unity, work, and unity, study, and work.
Excellent point, and so important for these extremely troubled times. You know, as we look at the pain around the world, and from time to time can sense a degree of that pain that others are suffering, we're reminded that when we pursue that second fundamental object of the old TS and now ULT, that second object, the comparative study of world religions, of philosophies, of sciences, ancient and modern, if we hold that effort, that view of what the study could be, we begin to develop an understanding and a compassion for souls who are not necessarily in the mainstream of the theosophical movement, who may be really floundering in the great turmoil societally and culturally and globally, economically. But by looking at what was ancient, what is modern, by looking at the philosophical basis of thought, this study is not abstract. It really is not intellectual. It is a guideline, a tool for being able to see the hearts of men and to see the struggle and to understand it, so that perhaps intuitively we know how to respond when we're approached by someone seeking help. It's an important effort, and it's an extremely simple, practical, everyday, 24/7 kind of a basis for study and action. MHW, your hand was up, and then we'll go to CBW.
Thank you. We were sitting here trying to make a connection, like a which came first, the chicken or the egg, in regards to unity, study, work, and the three objects, trying to get a connection between them, because it's what the process of accomplishing the three objects then be unity, study, and work. That in order to accomplish those, the three objects, we have to perform with the right motive, unity, study, and work.
Good point. And your comment brings up a dilemma that was experienced as a much, much younger student. Probably 40 years ago, where the comment was made to an older student 40 years ago, gosh, there's all these different topics to study. You know, there's so many different things to look at between a Wednesday night class and a Sunday morning class. And the elder student chuckled and said, no, we're all studying one thing all the time. It's all different aspects of the one. So whether we're thinking about the three fundamental propositions, the nature of deity and the nature of cycles and rest and manifestation, karma and reincarnation and evolution, whether we're considering the three objects, the three very practical goals of what it is to be a ULT, or whether we're looking at this morning's topic, unity, study, and work, it's really three aspects of one, isn't it? It's life lived well, but it's really that essence evolving according to our efforts. CBW, you've been waiting quite a while. Yeah.
Well, all we can say is, thus I have heard. And we begin to study the Declaration, the fundamentals, and all these big words we hear. So all the help in the world is given to us with that little page called the Declaration. Concentration. Contemplation first. Meditation. And we have a library. So those of us who are sort of soaked up with the modern educational method finally find out it's not in books. It's not in the books. Here at the lodge, we learn these words of contemplation, concentration. But meditation, what is that?
Well, you know, it's a, you've used a couple of interesting turns of phrase. You said, here at the lodge. And here we are zooming in, looking at each other on digital screens, seeking the eyes of each other in a certain way. Here we are seated as illusionary, separate personalities. And are we not the lodge? Here at the lodge, here at the center, here at the core, we are preserving, exploring, invigorating, applying certain very, very ancient ideas and truths. And in that way, we are meditating. You know, there's some in the Western world that consider meditation some kind of a yoga or Tai Chi practice, you know, where they're passive, they're using mantras, they're staring at dots on walls, they're taking particular physical poses or breathing exercises. Within the philosophy of theosophy, a very, very high form of meditation, the Raja Yoga, the harmony of creation of life, is meditation as this morning, where each of us sits imbued with these ideas, a lodge of ideas within. We also sit in a group conversation, a group exchange, making every effort to understand each other and the point of view and the topic at hand. And moreover, seeking to meditate together to concentrate and consider and reach an intuitive understanding of what it is to be spiritually at one, regardless of distance, regardless of conditions, spiritually at one, what it is to personify, to embody, to create a condition that reflects spiritual nucleus of universal brotherhood and reflects that in the outer actions of life as we know it each day. So the meditation goes on. It's 24/7 in terms of trying to live mindfully in a concentrated, one-pointed way. It is meditation, that attempt to raise thought collectively together in a gathering or a lodge such as this morning. And it is also the meditation in our most private hours, some in the body, when we sit and practice and study and think actively, but also when we are out of the physical body in the deepest states of sleep. Was there another point or comment or question? JD?
I was just going to say that while unity is achievable within the lodge, that the real difficult work is outside of the lodge, where you have to make connection with people that basically think very differently. You cannot isolate yourself from others. You have to find ways to form connection with people who think significantly different. And in today's environment, that is very important, because otherwise our isolation becomes deeper, in the sense that we isolate ourselves from people who have a different political point of view. That's not healthy. And that's been one of my challenges, is to remain friends with people my age who have a very different point of view. It's been quite a challenge. But I've learned that you have to set boundaries, compromise on boundaries. There are certain things that we agree not to talk about, okay? Because if you go there, progress stops, just stops, okay? And the thing is, you have to be willing to open your mind to ideas that you're not comfortable with, okay? This is important, because this information can add to your overall context, your overall knowledge, and then can make connections with what you already know in such unexpected ways that suddenly you make this connection and you have a clearer view of something you thought you understood, but you didn't as well as you did now. It improves your understanding. And another challenge, again, is to recognize similar interest, where you can make these connections. To build brotherhood, you have to make connections as broad a group as you can, because those of us like us, this is a rare phenomenon. You have no idea how rare this is. Okay, so you spend a lot of time with people who think differently. So how do you do the work of unity there? There's the challenge. And another part of this is being aware of the impact of how you behave, the impact on others, because that's how you show the validity and the truth of what you're studying, what you believe, is by your actions, not by your words, but by your actions. That's why we have to be so aware of our impact on others.
Absolutely. Impact on others, you know, that awareness, frequently we have to depend on those that we're living with to mirror back to us. What was your facial expression? What was your tone of voice? What was your body language? And so as we deal with others in family and circles of friends and acquaintances and work colleagues, where the attitudes and the values seem like such a horrific kaleidoscope conflict of points of view, if as thinkers, as students of theosophy, we can turn that into a comparative study. What are the shared bases that we've got? Well, even with a nephew, to be perfectly personal, a nephew who is diametrically opposed in many points of view to what my personality is exploring, even with that nephew, the proposition, we both love the ideals that America stands for. We both love an America that would be constituted of peaceful, healthy, well-educated, hard-working individuals, fully respected. We get that. We may totally disagree on what that looks like and how to get there. We may totally disagree on whether there was a radical American Revolution, or was it a spiritual evolution? Was it the impress of ideals and ideas that future generations could bring to the fore, could bring to a bloom, and could do that for a collective welfare. So that basis, I see you, I appreciate that you're soul, I love you as soul unconditionally, but we're gonna have to agree to disagree. Now let's move on. That peaceful kind of invitation models a lot of things. It models the unity of two souls talking together. It models compassionate, unconditional love. It models the desire for harmony and oneness. It models, hey, there's ideals, there are spiritual, metaphysical realities behind what you're fretting about. And at the same time, it diffuses, it takes away the flame from the personal divergence that can be so horribly ugly and so illusionary in its divisiveness. Crosby also wrote and said, once the right ideas are implanted in our minds, we can help the world by speaking of them and by exemplifying them. We can do that much, however selfishly the world moves on. So it's at once simple and so complex and loving and yet so volatile at the same time. But isn't it from friction that tremendous heat develops? Isn't it from the friction of dead wood and stone that the flame is produced, that fire is produced? Isn't that a similar kind of thing to what we explore and experiment and experience daily? MDW.
This idea of selfishness, but it really is the focus of all that we do. We have grown up with this kind of selfishness that where we long for competition and we like the winner and we like winners and we like the game. And so the idea of competition, it just lingers in our psyche because we are always pitted against each other. And with this philosophy and what is said by being aware of how you are viewed by others is that cooperation is that law of harmony. It's cooperation. And we sort of like consider that a mantra, cooperation. And it's very amazing how something that you don't agree with, something you find offensive, that you do not rail against it, but you sit quietly and look for ways in which you can cooperate with this person to help them move forward, because apparently they're very stuck. And often it's in an emotional place that they're stuck.
And being stuck in an emotional place, can't that happen to a student of theosophy as well? If we, in our effort to study, if we find ourselves beginning to dogmatize, becoming rigid in how we understand the three fundamental principles, or we find ourselves kind of reciting presentations instead of taking the time to revitalize our understanding of a subject matter, to look at a subject matter or a reading or a proposition as though we've never seen it before, to remain open-hearted and open-minded. We have to, as students, guard against the notion of I know that. Been there, done that. I've got it. I've mastered that. This is the point of view. And that's not what the process is it? It's the constant invitation to continue taking in more and more experiences and playing with them and comparing them to universal truths and principles and rejecting the dross and keeping what's significant and pure. And again, the speaker just mentioned competitiveness. We have to be so careful as nurturers of young souls, even if the young soul is in a 90-year-old body. We have to be so careful because we can inculcate, inflame, set off that competitive nature that we learned very, very early at home, at school, on the playground. You know, who was going to get the blue ribbon? Who was going to win the pennant? Who's got a Super Bowl ring? What person made it all the way to the top 1% as measured by money? Those kinds of competitions that are in the national psyche, they're in the culture that we're swimming in, all have to be analyzed purely. And that's one of the refreshing uses of the Kuan Yin pledge, a very ancient pledge, is to look at that and then bring it to the declaration where we're reminded that this is an invitation to each and all. No conditions, no politics, no class structure, no skin tone, no gender differences, no religious bents, just a cooperation, an intermingling, a blending, harmonizing of the various points of view.
CBW.
Yes, CBW.
When we read the literature, the Declaration, the library, and so forth, there is a voice that constantly drops hints in our ear and then in our mind. All things, love conquers. All things, love conquers. And when we hold on to those words such as that, they make an impression on us. And even though we say, where have I heard that before? Now we have been lifted up out of the intellectual into that particular stage where we hear things like this. Two people together, no, three. And when we keep on, we understand the term universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. So all sense of separateness or the tendency to compare, we put our diplomas, that is our whatever high school, we put them in a little basket and leave them on the front door before we come into the lodge. Universal universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. Love conquers all things. We've heard it, keep repeating it, and it may open up an electric light bulb in your head.
Love conquers all, for sure. It's the antidote to the bully on the playground. We know that, you know, certain Western religious teachers said turn the other cheek. And our own Dr. Martin Luther King spoke about an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth develops only a group of blind, toothless human beings. It has nothing to do with curing the ills of society. So love conquers all. May we find unity in that. May we study that. And may we work along those lines. Our time is up for now, but Wednesday night at 7:30, You have the invitation to return and zoom in and create a lodge anew and to look at the back portion of Answers to Questions. Have a great day and a great few days.